We have a red light. I haven't got a pox, though.
Okay.
All right. We're on and recording. All right. I have a little problem with a message today, at least parts of it. Maybe I'll get over it. Or maybe some of you will. We will see. But I'm going to give you a big disclaimer a little bit later that I rarely give. Can you all hear me now?
Yeah.
You can? Okay. Okay, first of all, I was planning on doing something like a very brief little comment about the missions conference that four of us attended last week. As I began to pray about that, it was kind of an afterthought. The Lord clobbered me, zapped me. It's different. And then the next part's really different. All right, but hang on. Whatever we don't finish today, we'll begin with next week and put it all together as we lead toward Passover. I want to thank you all for your sensing and seeing this outreach, and Norm for what he's doing. I mean, what Norm is doing will provoke people to jealousy and inform others who don't know what's going on. Perfect. All right, I'm going to talk a little bit about this Missions Expo. I shared with some of you that it was put together by two very old friends of mine who got married to each other. Okay, Patty and I led the college group at Downey First Baptist Church in the early 60s. All right, Leonard went to a different church, and he threw our outreaches to Mexico. We were, as a teen, when I was 17, 18 years old, we were going to Mexico on mission trips. And he became one of the leaders. He played the guitar and sang. He and Patty ended up getting married. To make a long story short, UGO was formed Youth, Unlimited Gospel Outreach, where they took youth, junior high and senior highs, to Mexico as missionaries. They were trained for projects. I was a part of the original board of directors with that organization. They're still alive and well. They've got 46 full-time missionaries now all over the world. Pretty good deal, huh? And they're still doing the same things that they did back then. So it was neat to see that, but they've founded another organization that puts on these mission expos. And I have good news and bad news for all of you about that and about what we experienced last week. I'm going to tell the truth. First of all, Friday's session, okay, was put on for leadership only. Okay, leadership. The guy who taught the class had been a missionary for many, many, many years. He sees himself today as a coach, a missions coach, to help groups, congregations, teams, and so on, to see, you know, from the outside, sometimes looking in, you can see things that we miss. But his presentation was mainly concerning mission strategy. What is working in the world today in other cultures, and why? So it's some strategy. We may be doing this in the future. I don't want to speak for Janice at this point, but we had briefly talked about the possibility of putting on, that was like 7 hours, of putting on a 1 or 2 hour class here sometime after Passover to impart to you that information. Anyone interested in missions can come to that class. We're talking about that. All right, it was excellent, but there was some bad news about the class as well as good news. But I want to tell you briefly what was imparted to us. All right. First of all, of course, they started with Acts 1:8, which is a secondary giving of the Great Commission. But the point of that one was, in Acts 1:8, you will be witnesses. By the way, in the Torah portion, in the Haftorah portion today, and in the previous two chapters leading up to it, that's stated three times, or four. You will be witnesses unto me. You will be witnesses unto me. People don't tend to think of that in the, quote, Old Testament, in the Tanakh. Oh, it's really there big. And it even says where? To the nations. It's the stating of the Great Commission in Isaiah's time. God's plan and purpose for his people was always to do that, to be a light to the nations. His point was, it starts here. Okay, here, in Jerusalem, Judea, it starts here. What Norm is doing, what the Seder is all about, it starts here. The Seder and what Norm is doing is something all of you can be involved in. There's no special training to pay for somebody's way and bring them to a Seder. Okay, and then talk to them afterwards. Say, what do you think? Any questions? I'm right. Okay, anyway, starts here. Okay, the whole idea again, it's not so much new, but bringing some things together that pierced my heart. Which I'll tell you about. We've been given a message, and I want to talk about some of the aspects of that. It needs to be a passion. There needs to be a passion. A passion. I'm going to ping on some things this morning. Okay? I'm going to ping on some things. And we'll see how you like it. See how I like it, okay? In a little bit. A passion from our hearts. But it's a passion about Yeshua. Is there a passion about Him? Or do we get excited about other stuff? The passion needs to be for Him, about Him. We need a passionate purpose for existing. Why do we exist? Why do we exist? Okay, well, we're warning. The Shabbat after Yom HaTzmaot, Israel's Independence Day, I am going to again explain and proclaim Adat's purpose. The reason we exist. Why are we here? It's stated in our bylaws, okay? Our statement of purpose, our reason for being, and we're going to walk through that and remind you of why we're here. That's up and coming, all right? We need a passionate purpose. It was His, what's His passion? What's His passion? If you were in the Luke study this last week, we got some of that. All right, what's His passion? He imparted something to us. Okay, He imparted to us, and it's to be imparted to others, what His heart is, what His passion is. We are, and they quoted, this is a quote from the class, we're to be change agents. I've said that before. We're to be change agents in the world around us. The world is going downhill really fast. They need to know what we know, who we know. We have the answer. We have the answer. We are to be agents of change. Y'all remember back in the Armstrong building when I taught the series on Ephesians, right? Every word, remember that one? Okay, good. I'm glad you're there. In Ephesians chapter 4, it's a great chapter of the spiritual gifts. However, when you read that, the way it reads, and in the old King James, it's not the right grammar, but it's that the gifts were given, the spiritual gifts, were given for the equipping of the believers for the work of the ministry. You have been equipped spiritually. You've been gifted already, but it's not, okay, for what? For the work of the ministry. The concept is we are all in ministry. It's not just me. Okay? We are all in ministry biblically. We need to see that and understand that. It's not just me. I have a particular gifting. You have other giftings. We all need each other. Okay? It's not the clergy. Okay, but the body. It's all of us, it's the congregation. And then our coach took it to the next level with missions because of how we think about stuff like that. Y'all realize that there are some places that don't want to talk about missions or you have missionary speakers and stuff like that. Okay? They do. It's alive and well. Missions is a part of the discipleship process. Matthew 28, the Great Commission. All right, what did Yeshua say? So you got to understand that He's given His final shot as the most important thing He would ever say. Okay? He says, make disciples. We're to be in the disciple-making process. We're to make disciples. Of who? Of the nations. You have to go out there and do that. Okay? Make disciples. It's a disciple-making process. We are to be agents of change. Agents of change. Okay, we are called. We have been called. But to participate in His purpose. In Isaiah 42 and 43, His purpose is stated. To be a light to the nations. To be witnesses. It's the stating of the Great Commission way back then. And taking it to like Revelation. A man, Mackey, read from Revelation, I will be too this morning. But in chapter 5, and later in chapter 7, we're called to participate in His purpose that, you know, there's a reason. It's not just because it's nice or it's fun or it's an adventure, it is all that. But that every, I quote, every tribe, tongue, people, and nation will be given an opportunity. Okay? That's the reason. They need to be given the opportunity. Missions is seen in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Did you know that? Well, let's start with Genesis 12, Abraham. Something to do there with missions? Oh, yeah. How about the nations of the earth will be blessed in you? Okay? God has so... Who's He sending in Isaiah? Okay, his chosen people. But the concept is they have a blessing for the nations. They have a bless. The nations will be blessed with their message, with who they are, because we bring to the world around us a knowledge of the only God there is, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the Bible. Most of the world does not know who he is. They need to be told. And then in Revelation, which we'll get there a little bit later, especially in chapter 7, the bottom line is that it did work. Somebody went, and somebody told them, and they're going to be in heaven. Now, a little bit of time out. Janice gave a great message. She was invited to give a teaching there. Unfortunately, it was not recorded, so you can't get it. But part of that message had to do with teaching other missionaries. And what opened my eyes was when we were talking to the conference people about attending this, I asked an important question. Do you understand what Messianic Judaism is? I'm talking to missionaries. I've been around for 40 years. They said, no, they don't. So I explained a little bit. See, these are missionaries from all different cultures of the world. Think about that. They're all, and some countries have many cultures within the country. So what was stated to them, these are missionaries, leaders in congregations, people who are on missions boards and so on, in various congregations, people who want to be a missionary. Well, one thing that was conveyed was, if you understand how to reach Jewish people, because they have a culture, it's our calendar. It's the holidays. It's all that we say and do. But the difference is that no matter what culture you go in to that Jewish community, you reach them the same way. They celebrate the same holidays at the same time with the same readings in Hebrew the same way. So one thing we can do for them, all these different missionaries, is train them how to reach into the Jewish community because they don't know how to do it. And they thought it was different in every country. It's not just the same. So their eyes were open to us. We were the only Messianic group there. More on that in a little bit. But moving toward Passover and our Seder, at the last Seder. By the way, 1/4 of the book of John is what Yeshua said that night. Pretty important night. That's why we're doing our teaching of what happened that night. One thing he said, though, was this. He said, as the Father has sent me. He was sent, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The whole picture. As the Father has sent me, so send I you. That's from his lips, from his heart. The Great Commission, if you look at the structure of it, is a command. It's not a nice thing to do. This would be nice. No, it's a command. It's a command. There's a sense of urgency when Yeshua gives it. It's as we studied Acts, it's one of those go now kind of a things. Leadership. This is from our class. Leadership, it's me, some of you, is to impart Yeshua's vision, not my vision, his heart. And all of us are to be a part of the vision. To change the world. That's the vision, to change the world. It's exactly what happened in the book of Acts. As they're coming to Thessalonica, people were getting worried. These people who have turned the world upside down are coming to our town. Wow, what a great reputation. To do that, you have to send people out there. That's what they did. And by the way, in a future message, when Paul wrote to Thessalonica, it was the model group of believers. The ones who were shaking in their boots were, in fact, changed. When you read 1 Thessalonians, they were changed dramatically. It worked. It worked. And it still works. Most missionaries, most ministers, most pastors make their decision, okay, teens, this part's for you, more for you later. Most people in ministry make their decision when they're a teen. I did. It still works. I haven't turned around and gone back. Okay? Teens, statistically, if you don't make that decision while you're a teen, you're not going to make it. That's how important. The decisions you're making now that you're forming will determine your destiny. Where you go, what's it going to be, what you're going to do. Most of the missionaries made that decision in high school. In high school. Teens, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do with your life? Are you going to invest it into things of eternal value? Or not? Because you are deciding your future right now. Your destiny is being determined by your choices right now. Right now. And unfortunately, sometimes you don't get a clear picture of what ministry is about or what missions is all about. You get bits and pieces and fragments and you can't make a good decision. Now, are you ready for me to go out on a limb? To go way out there? Okay. A confession to make. Sometimes, there have been a few occasions when I'm writing something, I write out my notes and so on. There have been some occasions when I'm doing that. Now you all understand the gifts of the Spirit, right? Okay, there's one gift called the gift of tongues. All right? Now, on occasion, what has happened as I'm writing is all of a sudden I begin to write in tongues. Not a different language, but I start writing so fast that I have no clue what I'm writing down. Honest truth, that's happened a few times. And I can't wait to stop so I can go back and read it. That's what happened. Now, Bodhi may think I write in tongues all the time because of how... Okay. But I don't. This is the actual real copy. I rewrote it so I can read it. But this is from the Lord. So there's a word to you from the Lord as I was conveying some of these thoughts from the conference that came. And he also told me that some of you are not going to like this. And my reaction is, well, then you don't like what he says. This is from his heart. This is what he is saying. And when I finished, I looked at that and I go, I'm going to be in a little bit of trouble on some of this stuff. Well, so what? Well, what else is new? Here we go. All right. And I want to read exactly what I wrote. And then there are times I will interject my thoughts. So, you ready to go? Here we go. The whole, and part of it has to do with being a part of the Book of Acts study and the Book of Luke study. If you can't be there physically, you can get the CDs. I pray you do that. The whole crescendo of all four Gospels and of Yeshua's teachings, there's a crescendo. We saw that this last week in Luke. Luke is taking us somewhere, and things are getting more difficult. We're in chapter 14. Every now and then Luke will throw in a little thought about discipleship. Here's a thought about a discipleship. In 14, we got blasted with the cost of discipleship and how much that costs. Family, friends, livelihood. And Yeshua is saying in chapter 14 of Luke, he's saying, don't start the process if you're going to quit. Know what you're getting into, but once you start, you finish. You don't turn back, you don't stop. But know what you're getting into. A disciple is a disciplined learner. Anyway, the crescendo in all four Gospels of Yeshua's teachings is not leading to the crucifixion. You're thinking, well, aren't we going to talk about that at the Seder? Oh, yeah. Guess what? It's not leading even to the resurrection. And we're talking about that at the Seder. The resurrection was a Passover event. But that crescendo leads somewhere else. That we have been given that message about the resurrection and crucifixion. That's a message that we have been given about Him. That's to be imparted by us, through Him, to take to all people groups in all places, so that the last person in the farthest possible place in the world has an opportunity to hear about Him and to make a decision concerning Him that will affect their eternal destiny. It's an eternal issue. Okay, the resurrection is the most wonderful event of all time. But if nobody knows about it, so what? They have to know what happened. They have to know what happened. I'm going to tell you a story a little later that I hope makes you feel really bad. It does me. That's later. I'm a change agent, so I make people feel bad. Oh well. The Gospels end, all of them, with Yeshua's reason for training His disciples. He trained them. Disciples are people in training for ministry. He trained them, but for a purpose. And all four end with this in mind. They were to be witnesses, just like it says four times in these chapters in Isaiah that we were reading these last couple of weeks. We're to be witnesses of Him. Not of something else, of Him. Of His resurrection. Every sermon in Acts dealt with the resurrection. We're to be, He's alive. The founder of all other world religions are dead. You can go to their tombs and they're in there. We go to the tomb in Jerusalem and it's empty. Nobody's there. He's alive. He's alive. He lives. That's our message. But we got to tell people about that. And beside that, it gets even better. He has a free gift that he is offering to all people who will receive it. We are supposed to give that invitation. We're to give it out as his ambassadors. The resurrection in itself doesn't have all that much value if nobody knows about it. They have to know it really happened and question it. That can't be true. Love those questions because we can prove it's true. Okay, it's the most well-attested to historical fact of all time. It has the best case of a historical event of anything, in anything in history. This is fun stuff. But we're to give his invitation as his ambassadors. The book of Acts. This is what the Lord told me to say, but I've said this before. The book of Acts is how they did it. It picks up where Luke ends. That's how they did it. But it's our manual on how we're to do it as well. And how we're to teach others to do it. And as we studied that together on Thursday nights, a miracle took place. When we got to chapter 13, that was the first place they were sent. That's when someone came to us and said, I know some people in Montevideo, Uruguay that might need you. And the connection was made right on time. And we rose to the occasion, responded to the call, sent down a team. And now we're a part of a team with Ubaldo implanting a new Messianic Jewish congregation in Montevideo, Uruguay. Pretty neat, I'd say. Pretty neat. But we're to teach others how to do that as well. Part of this conference was to be available to do that. We can teach you how to reach Jewish people in Montevideo. Acts is not just about missionaries. Okay, if we think that, it gets narrow-minded. It's not, okay, it's about something else. Congregations. It's about congregations. Sending out change agents, who we can call the missionaries, but they're sent to change the world. Some in the congregation are to go. But some are to stay and provide financial and prayer support for those that go. When you look at the teams that were sent, they were small teams. There wasn't a whole congregation, but they were all praying and supporting what that team was doing. That's the picture in the book of Acts. To help impart the vision to others. And a part of that vision, a big part, is those that stay home and pray and give and send clothing and food and medicine and whatever. And we could all be a part of that. But the rest of the Brit Hadashah follows suit. Think about it like this. All the epistles, all of them, they're letters that are sent to congregations or individuals where the missionaries, the visionaries is a better term, where the visionaries went. Those letters are sent to them because something happened. They were changed. They were born again. And there was instruction on how to deal with all these things. It's where they went, where they had birthed messianic congregations. The only exception is the book of Revelation, which shows something else. It shows us, first of all, the fruit of the visionaries. Where does it say that? Along with the final events of his witnesses, how about the 144,000? The final events which lead up to his return, which he will be welcomed to Jerusalem by messianic Jewish believers. The fruit of the visionaries, what am I talking about? Turn to Revelation chapter 7. Turn to Revelation 7. Starting with verse 9. John's really busy in the book of Revelation. And what's interesting is this begins just after the introduction of the 144,000. Some other time, not today, look at the difference in this list of the 12 tribes compared to other lists. One thing is that Judah is first. This is not birth order. Why is Judah first? That the tribe Messiah would come from. All right? In the kings. Anyway, verse 9. John says, after these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude which no one could number. How many people were there? A lot. This is good news. Okay, and look at where they're from. Here's where they're from. Of all nations, tribes, peoples, and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. The Great Commission worked. Somebody went and told these guys in these tribes and tongues and places all over the world and all of time. And they believed. They heard the message. They listened to it. They responded. Congregations were birthed. They showed up around the throne. Part of Janice's message was, wouldn't it be nice if when you're standing around that throne, you look over and you see so-and-so that you led to the Lord. They're there because of you. That they're because you told them. And that would be nice. Wouldn't that be nice? Somebody told them. It'd be nice if it was you. It gets better. The next verse. Clothed with white robes and palm branches in their hands. Wait a minute. What's that? You know what the word is? Lulav. They've got a lulav. That's kind of a Jewish thing, isn't it? It doesn't end here. These are Gentiles. They have a lulav. Someone told them every year we teach you how to wave it, right? Pay attention, all right? Because you're teaching others how to do this. They do it in heaven. I think that's a really cool verse. Well, the Brit Hadashah does not see certain people as missionaries. That's not taught. That's kind of our distortion. But it sees all of us as missionaries. All of us as visionaries, but just doing different parts of that. Okay, it's not just our missions board. It's not just a team that we send somewhere. It's all of us. It's all, that's the picture in the New Testament. Supporting, in some way, in some form, the vision. But we all need the vision. We all need the vision. We all need the vision. Some more toes I'm going to step on now. Okay, some toes. How many of you attend Torah Club? Come on, confess. Raise your hands. How many of you like Torah Club? Okay. I'm going to ping on Torah Club. Is that okay? Good. It's not okay, is it? It's not okay. I'm going to ping on Torah Club. How many of you attend the Thursday night study? We did Acts, now we're in Luke. I'm going to ping on that study too. So see if I'll make it even. I'll ping on that one a little bit as well. All right. The learning. Oops. Pardon me, the learning and discussing is what we do in those kind of classes, learning and discussing. Of the message was never meant to be the reason that we exist, the reason to have a congregation. At Torah Club, and by the way, I've got to say, I really love the concept. It's like I love seminary. I love that we sit around learning about the Bible, talking about the Bible, you discuss all this stuff. I loved it. But that's not the end of the story. You're supposed to do something about it, not just talk about it. So in Torah Club, it's not just we just talk about it, we're supposed to do something about what we talked about. In our Acts study, in the Luke study, we're supposed to do something about what we talk about. We don't just talk about it. We're supposed to do something about it. And that's the way it is. It's not the same with coming here. Isn't that? We have a nice congregation. I like the music. I like the dance. I like the teaching. No. What are you doing about it? Our Seder is a good chance to do something about it. Invite unsaved people. Because they will know. They will not be able to say to God, I didn't hear this in the message. No. They will have heard clearly. You can be a part of that. Invite them to be a part. Come with them. Sit at their table. Pay their way if you can. We're to learn, yes, and discuss, and I love it, but we're to do those things that we discuss and learn. And we're to be, as Isaiah said over and over again, a light to the nations. It's Messianic Jews carrying a Messianic message to all nations, imparting to them the vision. That's his heart. And the mission, that's his commission. It comes from him. He gave it to us. If you don't like that, talk to him, not me. He's the one who said those things. And he said them in a way that there was great urgency about doing what he said. And they did it, by the way. They took it very serious at the risk of their own lives. That's how serious. Okay? It's been imparted to us. teaching them, just discipleship, training them, empowering them to be living witnesses of God's faithfulness and love. That's what Isaiah is saying. You are a living witness of God's faithfulness and His love and His word. That's who you are. But then, sending them to give out that invitation. I have an invitation for you. In our Luke study, chapter 14, we saw a couple of banquets. Invitations were given. Some people didn't show. They didn't show. It's not that they weren't invited. They chose not to show. That's not your problem. Our job is to give the invitation, to give that invitation. We are to represent Him. We're to model the life that He taught. That's a tough deal, isn't it? We're to model the life. We're to be living witnesses of the resurrection. It's true. This book is true. We are to impart the vision and lead people into His presence where they will find His love, His forgiveness, wholeness, and eternal life. The meaning of life. People walk around, what is the meaning of life? We know what it is. It's right here. It's here. The meaning of life has been given to us. We're to impart, we're to answer that question. This is why, this is our purpose. This is why we are here. This is why we exist. If we don't do that, who else is going to do it? Oh, the different cults are doing it. They're taking a false message to people that haven't heard. And those people are believing them. They're doing it. That's not good news. We need to be leading the way. We're the ones that they need to be doing it. And no one can do what we do, by the way. I believe it is up to us. The message and the commission has been given to us. Yeshua gave it with a sense of urgency. It's the eternal destiny of people that we're talking about, not just knowing some nice things. It's forever. Where are they going to be forever? If the stakes are really high. At the conference, we saw many great organizations. Okay, a lot of good ones. I wrote down some of the number of tables. I'll see if I can find it. Doing many great works in many parts of the world. It was good. But, we were the only ones with the Messianic Jewish authentic, contextually correct, accurate message that when taken to Jewish people in all cultures, in all parts of the world, will come to life in their hearts. We're the only ones. You see, we have a two-pronged approach. We can go to the Jewish people, but also teach the missionaries how to do that as well. So we have a double calling to impart this to people who have the vision already, but don't know how to reach Jews. And you know what? If we look at Yeshua's emphasis, where he says, go first to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Where in Romans, three times in Romans, Paul says to the Jew first, and also to the nations, modern missions has gone to the Jew last. To the Jew last. It's time that changed. And guess who's supposed to tell them? It's us. That would be us. Lovingly, nicely. We're the missing pieces. They need to know and understand. The message that we are giving will so much deepen what they're already giving and make it more powerful. They're starting to see that. Say, okay, can you come? Yes, we can come and teach you. That when they have a full understanding from a Hebraic cultural Jewish understanding with a Jewish worldview, when, as Paul put it in Romans, when Gentiles come into their fullness, that's it. When they come into their fullness, Jews come to the Lord. The two come together. Read Romans. The missionaries need us. The people who don't know the Lord need us. And we need them. We need them. We're not out there alone. We need to work together, learning from each other how to finish. You see, in the book of Acts, we saw the start. Peter and James and John and Mark and Paul and Barnabas and Lydia and Silas and Priscilla and Aquila and Luke started something. We're supposed to finish it. The baton has been passed to us. The message is the same. It hasn't been changed or altered. It hasn't been finished. It's been given to us. It's kind of our turn. It's kind of our time. And I have some bad news on that. The time is almost up. It's almost up. Some have said, as Isaiah did, Hineni, here am I, send me. Some have said that. Those people out there, I'll name a few in a minute, need to know what you know. Who's going to tell him? Who's going to tell him? These you know what you know. Who is going to tell them? At this conference, we have a big gymnasium full of tables. And I have the numbers somewhere. I'll find it. Maybe 30 tables of organizations. It wasn't congregations. It was organizations, mission organizations. I looked across the room, and I saw what had to be the oldest living person on the face of the earth. I looked at this guy, and I'm thinking, I need to go talk to him. That is a missionary. I need to go see where he's been and what he's done. Walked over. His name's Jim. I forgot his last name. All right. I started talking to him. I was drawn to him. What did he do for the kingdom? Well, he only spent 50 years in the Amazon jungle translating the Bible into 7 different tribal tongues. That's all he did. My gosh, that's a hero. That's a hero. I look at him, nobody even knows your name. Look what you did. He took it serious. Those people in those tribes came to the Lord. They listened, they believed, they came to the Lord. At another conference I went to a few years ago, this story made me feel bad. As the missionary was sharing, same kind of a thing in the Amazon jungles they went. When they go, they have to learn the language. Wycliffe goes out and learns that language, okay, of that tribe. They're skilled and they're taught how to do that. They learn the language. They begin to live the life of a believer in front of these people. And then slowly begin to share with them the gospel about Yeshua, who he is and what he's done for them. Translate the Bible so they can read it. They teach them how to read. A lot of these guys don't have a written language. They teach them how to write their language from sound. And then this doesn't happen overnight. As this process begins, they share who is Yeshua. And the Holy Spirit does a phenomenal work, and there are signs and wonders that go along with it, and they come to faith and they believe. And usually whatever the chief does, everybody does. If the chief says, I believe, they will all believe. So in this one particular tribe, after they'd come to faith, and they were doing well, they were growing spiritually, and they're reading their Bibles, and they're having these questions that they would ask the missionaries. And one day they say, well, we have a question. Okay, the story you've told us that we believe, that is true, that's changed our lives, it's the most wonderful story of all time. But we have a question. When exactly was it that in Jerusalem Yeshua was put to death and he was raised from the dead and he ascended and the Great Commission was given? When was that? And the missionary said, well, it was about 2,000 years ago. And they looked. And they ask the question, why did it take you so long to get here and tell us? I don't have that answer. I don't have that answer. Because everywhere we go with this message, people will believe it. And they will come to faith in him. And nobody else is going. Nobody else is going. Now, you can all take part in this Seder as an outreach. Invite people. Hear the presentation, sit with them. But the missing piece of the conference, it had two parts, I was grieved. I had to get up and say something, okay? First of all, the first missing piece, we looked around the room, and there were all these old people. Retired people, old people, older than me. And so the question was, where are the youth? Because that's the future of the ministry of missions, of everything. They weren't there. Missing. Not there. Second part. Something else is missing too. You know, we got to know some of the people in this room. I was the only pastor in this study. Where are the pastors? Where are the leaders? And that's what was grieving some of these people from other missions boards, that their pastor does not have the vision. They do. But you know what? If their pastor doesn't, it's not going to go too far. It's not going to go too far. Back to the teens. You're in the process now, as I said before, of making life-changing, destiny-determining decisions. But the problem is, when it comes to being a missionary, we haven't told you what it is. What do they do? What's it like? You have this thing about movie or whatever. We failed in that. Now, at the teen retreat, that I was a part of for the whole weekend, we were still at that point working on the basics and conflicts of being a team. Okay? We were working on that and that kind of stuff. It's time to go to the next level. Okay, let's get through that and let's make some decisions that will affect the future of the world. It's time to make those decisions, guys. If you don't make them now, you're not going to make them. If you don't make them now, and you know what? We could light candles and dim the lights and sing a sad song and tell a sad story. And I could make you come forward and pray on your knees. I could do that. That's manipulation. I want you to hear from God, and you say, you know what? Count me in. Hineni, here am I, send me. I'm going to prepare for whatever lies ahead in ministry. That's my choice. That's what I want to hear. Not an emotional response. Because in Luke 14, we saw Thursday night, once you start the path, you're not supposed to go back. You should have said, no. You keep going. But count the cost first. Make sure this is what you want to do first. Remember that when Yeshua picked his disciples, he chose teens. Why did he do that? They're teachable. They have a life ahead of them. He chose teens. He invested all of him into young people. Now, getting back to where I started, this is an interesting circle of events for me. This was held in the church where I came to the Lord in 1962. Okay? The people that were leading it were part of that group. They were teens back then, though. But I was really blessed. I see the leadership of missionaries. I was in the teen group with you. Wow. They did it. And then I remembered my first trips to Mexico. And what happened when I was sitting down with Leonard, the leader, I kind of reminiscing about what happened and realizing the importance of these kind of outreach trips as a team. What do I know? And I'm just really glad that those messages weren't recorded. Because I pray that some of my old ones are lost forever, okay? But the message was terrible. See, we would go down to a village and the teens would hold the Bible studies and do the teaching. And the teens would give the evening message. And the teens would lead the music. The teens would tell the stories to children. The adults were there as chaperones. They didn't do the work. The teens did it. Everybody said, that'll never work. Well, the message was terrible. It was awful. Okay? But you know what? They listened. They listened to it. And guess what? They responded and they prayed. They accepted the Lord. I'm thinking, I actually thought this. I go, Lord, if you can use me here to do this, count me in. Okay? Because that means you can use me anywhere. All I just had to do was be available to go when I did, and he did. People came to the Lord. But the best part was, we have paperwork today. What I remember, and what I told Leonard was, what did it was when the Mexican people looked me in the eye. And I looked in their eyes. They were real people. And I had something they needed. And when I gave the invitation, they took it. And they stuck with it. They have hung in there. Leonard has been going down there for 40 years. And those people are still hanging in there. It works. If God can use a feeble teenager that doesn't know anything, he can use anybody. If you just do it, he will use you. They will listen to what you have to say. Thank God for the Holy Spirit who changes everything around from what I say and makes it into their heart. That's what he does. I'm glad of that. That's to the teens. Teens, make the right choice for your future. Now, the world depends on it. And the world's going down the tube right now. Okay, to everybody. Are you listening to the Luke study? It's recorded every week. Are you on the same page as where I'm teaching? Are you hearing the teaching of your leader? Did you hear the Acts study? Did you hear the teaching of your leader? You can get that stuff. See Jerry. I pray you do. I pray you listen. That's what the Lord's speaking to me. That's how he's speaking to me. The message hasn't been changed or altered, and the Great Commission hasn't been fulfilled. They gave the number of languages left. It's a lot. The number of places left. It's a lot. But all those places and all those languages and all those cultures within it have a Jewish culture, a Jewish community. And within those little pockets, there are Jewish believers. Those guys, as good as they are, don't know how to speak to them. We do. And while we can't go to all those places, we can train them how to do that and bless them. And part of it is teaching them how to do a Seder. Because when you go, you should do a Messianic Seder. And all of our holidays, but they have Yeshua as the focal point, as the center of those things. Well, what I want to do is begin next week with something. In this Haftorah portion is a tremendous witnessing tool to share with others. A lot of people miss. So we'll start there next week as we lead into the Passover concepts of the triumphal entry, the crucifixion, and the resurrection. But this Torah portion literally sets the stage for some dramatic statements of Yeshua at the Last Seder. It's amazing. And so I don't want to cut it short today, but I want you to read the Torah portion, the Haftorah portion, this one, for next week as well. We're going to start there and move toward the greatest expression of love possible. That when God, the whole thing about redemption means paying a price to get something back. There was a price paid. We teach salvation is free to you. It's not free. Major cost. The highest possible price was paid. And as we look forward to that event, people need to know what He has done. He paid the price. He gives you the invitation. All that starts right here, in this room, and goes from there. It goes from there. In the book of Acts, where it starts is that God says, oh, by the way, I know how feeble and how many shortcomings you have. I have a gift for you. The empowerment of the Holy Spirit will empower you to do this, because you can't do it on your own. But He will empower you. I've already given you gifts. He will empower you to use those gifts to reach out and change the world. Some of the stuff that's going on in the world today, there are a lot of leaders who are concerned about us, believers. You know that? You all know that, right? They want to make some laws about us, hinder what we're doing, what we want to do. Why are they concerned? Back to what's happened in Thessalonica. Because our message works. It changes things. They want things changed different. Let's change things this way. All right? And we can start maybe by praying for them. That drama would happen and the leadership that is now against us will be zapped by the Spirit of God and their hearts changed and turned and they come to faith in Yeshua. Let's talk about the worst case scenarios. The leader of Iran, instead of complaining about it, let's pray for him. Let's pray for them. There are believers in those communities. May their light shine. May they be agents of change. May evil, they mean evil, may be turned into a heart of love. The best example we have is Saul of Tarsus. It happened. It was a miracle. But he, in turn, is still changing us. So pray for them. And we'll pick up on some prophecy next Saturday morning. Let's all stand and pray. Our God and God of our fathers, I thank you that the message that you have given to us is powerful. That your word is living. It changes lives, it changes hearts. I pray we can connect to your heart. And wherever we live, whatever we do, wherever we go, that our light would shine. And our next door neighbors will be the first that we share with and talk to. And then while all of us can't go, all of us can't pray, all of us can't support, all of us can't plan and support the events that are home right here, like what Norm is doing and what we're doing in this room in a couple of weeks. In their own homes, Shabbat dinners. What a great outreach. Open your home to Shabbat dinners. Invite people. What happens at the Shabbat dinner? You talk about the Bible. Talk about Yeshua. And I pray that your Spirit would overpower all of us and empower us to be that light that shines to where they see who Yeshua is. That they take the invitation that we all have and are born again. I pray you would use us, Lord, to be lights that shine. That we would live the life that you taught as an example. That we would be living witnesses of your faithfulness and your love and your word. And impart that to others. And Lord, I pray for the peace of Jerusalem today. That as they're preparing to walk through their Passovers, their Passover Seder meals, that the connections will be made, that that's simply a foreshadowing and prophetic aspect of what Yeshua, the Messiah, did for them. May the connections be made. May you use the Messianic believers, especially in Jerusalem, to reach into the lives and hearts of other leaders who do not yet know you, that their eyes would be opened and their hearts be opened to you, perfect time of the year, at this Passover. Yevarachacha Adonai v'yish maracha. Ya'er Adonai panavaleka v'hunacha. Yisa Adonai panavaleka v'yasem lacha shalom. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you shalom, his peace. B'shem Yeshua HaMashiach, Sar Shalom. In the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, the Prince of Peace, the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world, that takes away your sin, that takes away my sin. Thank you for the gift. May we impart the gift and the vision in Yeshua's name. Amen.